Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Cryptic Commander. We are your hosts. I'm John Nose.
And I'm MTG Gaming Bob.
And we've got quite a show for you this week. Proudly sponsored by North Valley Games, where you can go to northvalleygames.com, enter the promo code TCC2021. You can save 10% off your whole order, and also the program where they're buying back your singles. Hobby Goblins, Artopia, partner with Magic the Gathering Facebook group, Players Group, and Cosmic Gaming. All right, this week, starting off with Card of the Week, we've got Light Paws Emperor's Voice. It's actually a set or two back here, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. It costs one generic and one white. It's a legendary creature, a fox advisor. Whenever an aura enters the battlefield under your control, if you cast it, you may search your library for an aura card with mana value less or equal to that aura and with a different name than each aura you control. Put that card into the battlefield attached to Light Paws, Emperor's Voice, then shuffle on a 2/2 body. What do you think about this card?
I think it's a fine card for the cost. I mean, one white, one colorless is certainly cheap enough for a 2/2 body. The auras are probably going to get a little tough to come by if you stick with just monocolored white, but there's certainly a plethora of auras once you expand out to larger pool in a multicolored environment.
So what you think is like in a standard environment, this wouldn't be so hot or something?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a little tough unless you're just sticking with Kamigawa Neon Dynasty draft itself. And if you were running it in Commander, was really where my thought was going, running it as a Commander, okay, might be a little difficult to just stick with purely white or as in a 100-card format.
Right. Interestingly enough, last week, yeah, I think it was last week, me and a friend of mine, we went to go play Pioneer for the first time.
Oh.
We both did, right? And he took a deck that was white weenie, and it played a lot of auras. And I took a blue tempo deck, right? At any rate, well, it was a blue proliferate tempo deck. Anyway, his deck didn't do too hot. My deck didn't do too hot. And then I went back, and he said he was going to watch some videos of some people playing the deck and stuff because it was a net deck, you know. Mine wasn't so much of a net deck, but it could have been because it's like just a proliferate deck, you know. Mine used a Jace, the one that self mills with the Ugin, you know, and just a whole bunch of proliferate, you know, and the Teferi Master of Time. So I'll do like spark doubles and create copies of those planeswalkers, just keep proliferating. It gets pretty insane quick, you know. Cards like Flux Channeler and that one that you play an instant where you draw a card and then proliferate. Yeah, it just gets real crazy, man, you know. Anyway, so we go back, we watch videos for his deck, and then, or he did. I go back and I play Magic the Gathering Arena, and I'm playing standard, man, and I get all the way up to like two spots before Mythic, and I start getting hammered, right? So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a break because I was getting kind of upset that I'm just losing so much and I'm getting knocked down the ladder. I switch over to Historic for a bit, you know, play with my proliferate deck that I play in real life. So I start climbing back up the ladder, you know, and mind you, this is an Historic where a lot of shenanigans can go off real quick, you know. And I come across a deck that run this Light Paws Emperor's Voice in Historic. And it went off bananas, bro. Bananas. You know, the fact that this is just one white and one other, and it's only a 2/2 body, don't let that fool you, you know. I mean, this, just say in the right hands, in the right format, in the right deck, this is not up there with Stoneforge Mystic, you know, right? It's not up there with Stoneforge Mystic, but this guy's a force to be reckoned with, man.
I'm sure in the right scenario it can be. Pioneer's not really a format that I'm really all that familiar with. I know it's a fairly newer format. And it's going to be a factor that people are going to have to start considering, you know, looking at the Pioneer. I'm not sure if you're aware that that's, in order to get on the Pro Tour, it's going to have to be part of your repertoire. So
I did not even know that. No.
Yeah. If you want to be part of the Pro Tour, you know, dust off your Pioneer skills. I'm pretty sure it's going to be, you know, Pioneer and Modern. And glad that they're actually bringing it back. You know, we'll see exactly how well they do with that. The, I don't know if you're familiar with in the last couple of years here that they get rid of the Pro Tour, then they bring it back, and
yeah,
there's some changes to it. So, you know, hang with them, people. Yeah, know, they realized it was a mistake.
And well, there's always kind of dusted off. There's always a change to it. Remember when they did the teams or whatnot?
Not really all that familiar with it. It's in, like, a state of flux for sure. They haven't, you know, nailed it. You know what I mean? It's not
right.
Like, if you're an old schooler like me, you remember the Pro Tour, and it was, you know, always kind of a bit weird to try to figure out how to actually get on it. But, you know, back in the day, it was a pretty stable thing, and then it's just gone through a number of iterations, and it's currently probably the most in flux I've ever seen it. But they realized that it's necessary. They really need to have a Pro Tour. So Pioneer is going to be part of it.
Well, speaking of Pioneer, we should go over to Top Decks real quick. And it's going to be real quick because it really nothing's changed this week. I'm letting the listeners know that. And Bob, in case you didn't know that, the decks didn't really change this week at all, man. So, and again, you can interrupt me here if you want. We've got Standard, Esper Rafine, Jun Nyxilis, Naya Enchantments comes in third place. Historic, Is It Phoenix, second place Selesnya Company, and then Red Deck Wins takes third place. Modern, one of my favorite formats, Is It Murktide, number one, Four Color Blink, and Tamir Cascade.
If you don't mind me breaking sure. in here at the moment, because when I think of Modern, I think of Mikachu. I don't know how many people watch him, and I'm sorry for plugging somebody else on your show. You're I think fine. He's a fantastic person, and it's yeah. so informative to me on a daily basis to watch his show. So he really helps keep his finger on the pulse of all things related to Modern. So getting into the Modern here, sorry, you know, Nikachu, shout out for him. Fantastic show that he puts on daily.
Oh, you're fine, man. I love Nikachu myself. He does Merfolk a lot, or he likes Merfolk. Mm-hmm. And I'm a blue player myself. I used to do a lot of Merfolk, but then I went the mill route, or, you know, other routes, you know. But yeah, I love Nikachu myself. Commander,
Tim of the Weaver. Popper.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, do you play Popper?
I don't, but it's something that I'm interested in, and it kind of, even if we don't talk about the top decks, but
Let's go ahead and
judge. I think it's going to be affected with what's coming up, though, so I think it might be worth mentioning because
let's cover all of them then. We'll do Legacy. Legacy is Blue Red Murktide. Number two is Death and Taxes, and then third place, 8 Cast. Mm-hmm. This seems like an interesting name. Popper, like you mentioned, we don't want to skip it. Mono Red Burn, number one. Blue Black Fairies, number two. And Boros Monarch, number three. Did I do Commander? I was going to
do Commander. We have not done Commander yet.
Okay. Number one, Timna the Weaver. Number two, Korvold Fae Cursed King. And number three, Atraxa. And last but not least, Pioneer. And this is a format I've been getting into more and more lately, which is interesting enough that we've talked about it. Red Deck wins number one. Number two, Azorius Control, which I'm thinking about building. And then finally, we got Green Devotion, number three. And those are your top decks this week. Well, Bob, I think we're going to go ahead and do a commercial break right now. When we come back, we've got Magic the Gathering Arena updates, Double Masters 2022, Beginner's Corner, and more.
So if you don't mind at the tail end of this, maybe even slap it on there, something to give a nod to the, you know, rapidly approaching Double Masters 2022 is probably going to shake up some of the stuff, especially with like Popper, with some of the downshifting, with some of the shifting of cards, you know,
right.
that's probably the format that will be affected the most is Pauper getting something downshifted to common. So it'll be interesting to see how these decks change up over the coming couple of weeks because of the printing of double masters.
Yeah.
So anyways, I don't know if you wanted to tack that on.
Oh, no, you're fine, man. It's going to be on the podcast. I mean, we're just going to go to a commercial break real quick, and then we'll come back, and, you know, we're going to have so much to talk about. But I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. I think it always changes up everything when it comes to the master sets, you know. I even made a joke back in the day. I can't wait for the band masters. All right. So we'll go to commercial. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. Welcome back. Bob, you've got another show you do too, right?
It's funny that you mentioned that. I do have my own channel. It's MTG Gaming Bob, and we are probably going to rebrand pretty soon because I have a partner, a co-host. His name is Matt. And it just is kind of weird being on MTG Gaming Bob, but would love if you would go check it out and just be prepared for the channel name to change in the near future. But you can also catch me most Thursdays on the round table for Mr. DJ Longhair, and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern on the Pat the Pauper channel.
I love going on the round table, man. You know, it's almost like every guest I get on here plugs it automatically, and that's how much we love Russ in the round table, though. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, it's great because in the true spirit of Magic the Gathering, he's one of the true pioneers that brings people together as content creators. And I meet a lot of people through that. I met Nikachu through there, Pat the Pauper through there. Just so many wonderful opportunities. This last week, we had an LGS owner to talk about the upcoming Double Masters 2022 from an LGS perspective. So it was fantastic and just supremely informative. And that's all thanks to Russ having the round table. So
that arises a question. Is that how we met? Or
No, actually, we met a long time ago through MTG Peddler, who I miss very much. And I really miss looking at his land collections and just think the world of him. I think he's a wonderful, fantastic guy, very genuine. And in the world of MTG, as you know, content creators, not to bash anybody specifically, but you have those types that have a persona, and then you have those people that are supremely real behind the scenes, exactly as they are when you see them on streams. And Peddler's one of those. Nikachu's another. I'm gratingly so the same guy in person or on stream. So either you love me or you hate me, but I am who I am no matter where you see me. There's no persona here. And Peddler's one of those just true, genuine people that really helped me get a start.
I do want to say something too, that it's my fault that Peddler's not on today's podcast. So I know you felt bad that one time that I wasn't on the podcast and you came on, right? And because I scheduled you for the guest, right?
And you did. That's correct.
Today it's my fault. And the listeners, you guys are more than welcome to, you know, lash out at me. That's fine. It's my fault. I got the time zones messed up. So I live in Arizona now. And Bob, you had mentioned earlier too in the pre-show that you didn't know I even moved, right?
Correct.
So I moved to Arizona, and the time zone here is 7:33, and back in the Midwest, it would be about 5:33, and Peddler lives even way east than that.
No, you got that wrong. It's 10:33 in the evening.
Oh, there you go. 10:33 in the evening. There you go. So, yeah, that's what I mean, man. And it's even later than that where Peddler's at, you know?
Nope. Midwest is pretty much the same time as East Coast. I'm here in Ohio in the Midwest, so
right
in the Cleveland area. So yeah, we're on the same.
Well, I thought New Jersey would be Eastern time zone, and then yeah, it had to be because we were in the central. Yeah, you're in central time zone, right?
No, we're in Eastern.
Okay, you're in Eastern. So central time zone, which I was used to, which is just a little bit left to you, and then I'm in mountain time zone.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Right.
So I used to live in Vegas for about 8 years.
Right.
It was just very odd being in mountain.
Yeah, it is. It is. But they say something like that there's no daylight savings time or nothing like that. So
yeah,
the time just doesn't change. Like it's the only time zone that just doesn't change. At any rate, more on that later.
maybe someday we'll have all three of us on a podcast together. That would be great.
That's exactly, man. And again, I apologize to everyone, you two, including you, Bob, that it was my fault Peddler's not on today's show. It should have been done 2 hours ago. But in all honesty, you just got done wrapping up one of your shows too, though.
I did, and I'm very grateful for you having me on the podcast today. I love being out there, and I love talking magic. It's something I really enjoy.
Speaking of which, we want to go ahead and cover Magic the Gathering Arena updates real quick so we can get along to more of our juicy content. We've got traditional Chromatic Cube Draft going on. So that's starting yesterday. Yes, yesterday until July 7th. It's just going to be a cube draft. It's going to be Phantom. So when you pay your coins or your gems, which I recommend coins if you do it at all, then you win your prizes accordingly. We've got June 24th, which is yesterday, till July 8th. Quick draft for Midnight Hunt. So those are pretty cool because you can use less coins than normal. So like when you do your premium or your traditional drafts, those usually cost like 5,000 or 10,000 or if not 20,000 gold coins, but your quick drafts are a lot cheaper. We got Midweek Magic, and this week it's Momer Basic. It's the one where you put down a land, and so it's all lands, and then one of them turns into a random magic card. So I stay away from that format. But if you play it, it starts the 28th and it lasts till the 30th. Two more left. We got Streets of New Capenna, which is draft format. You got your premier and traditional. That goes all the way until July 7th. And then finally, we've got Midweek Magic Historic Artisan. If you're not familiar with that format, it's commons only and uncommons only. So just commons and uncommons only. And that lasts until the 7th. Oh, wait, that starts July 5th, and it lasts till the 7th. And that is your Magic the Gathering Arena updates. Now, I want to get on some juicy content, and that's this double master set that's coming up, man.
Oh, boy.
So, just looking over these cards here, I'm going to just start from the top here. Imperial Seal. Wow.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And I think, you know, that's probably going to be the poster child to look at for Double Masters 2022 to see exactly what happens with the pricing of this card. It's original printing before it was announced for Double Masters 2022 a week or two ago was $1,800 a card.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. This was probably the number one most requested reprint in all of Magic outside of reserve list. And you know, alongside of the Warrior's Oath that's also in this set, those two are supremely high priced because of scarcity. They were only printed in Portal 3 Kingdoms, and Imperial Seal also got, I think, one minor reprinting as like a judge promo, and that thing is like $800. So it's really going to be a litmus test because it's not the best tutor for one black mana. Vampiric Tutor is actually a better card as far as playability, but it has this price tag because of its scarcity. So it'll be a very interesting case study to see what happens with Imperial Seal and Double Masters.
I see Dockside Extortionist all over the place because there's so many people are happy that one's getting reprinted.
That's another one.
Caverner's Souls, though, they did reprint that in the last Double Master set, correct?
I don't know. I don't believe it was in the, I'd have to double check that. I'm not sure if it was in the last Double Masters, but I don't believe so.
I know I personally pulled one, but I can't remember what set it was from. I don't think it was Double Masters, but it was around that time frame.
They had it in Zendikar Rising as a, what they call expedition land. So the box topper, and you could get them in the collector packs as well. And then they've had some, as the list print. Mm-hmm. Like for some of the sets, if you bought set boxes, you could have pulled it out of the list spot. But no, that's a great reprint. I think it's also another great card to look at in Double Masters 2022 to see just how resilient it is, because it's had a number of printings now within the last couple of years, and it just seems to rebound so quickly, right? So it's sort of a case study of resiliency to how far can you push reprintings of a card before you hammered the value into nothing.
We've got, pardon my screen here, Mana Vault. I think that's a well-deserved reprint.
Oh, yeah. Was it Ultimate Masters? Was that the last printing, I want to say?
I'd have to Google it, in all honesty. When I heard that the Ulamog and the Kozilek were coming back, I knew that Emrakul was coming back. And boy, just a few days ago, they spoiled that one, didn't they, Emrakul?
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of spoilers and leaks and a lot of conspiracy theory around all that. We probably shouldn't delve into that in this stream. It's talked about elsewhere.
And we don't on this podcast. We don't talk about speculation, but they did tell us that Emrakul is coming, though.
Sure. No, yeah. It's all been spoiled now officially by WotC. So
right.
We know the three Eldrazi Titans are coming. And what's really interesting for the three Eldrazi Titans is all three of them are going to be in that really select list of only five cards in Double Masters that are getting the textured foil treatment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, along with Renin 6 and Liliana the Last Hope.
Okay.
Me personally, for the one that I want the most, just on a personal level, I really want Ulamog in that special treatment. So it'll be interesting to see which of those five ends up becoming the most valuable, because realize you're only going to get one in 3% of the packs, right? So that means at 32 packs per case for the collectors, and they're only in the collectors, that means one textured foil per case, roughly. It's one case plus one pack. So they're going to be very rare and super expensive.
My
guess is Renin 6 will be the most expensive.
Well, not to mention they're going to have alternative artworks on these cards too, right?
They are alternative artworks, never seen before. Right. A lot of people kind of poo-pooed on the Renin 6. I like both the original art and the special art. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have new printings for each of these, new artwork for each of these, I should say. And they have a new treatment never seen before in Magic. So we'll see where these go. They're going to get pricey.
I saw the Sensei's Divining Top right here, but underneath it was Smothering Tithe, and that's what reminded me of it. They've actually got different versions of the artwork. Now, Damnation's coming back. Look at that one.
Oh, yeah.
Damnation.
Yeah.
The reprint.
Oh, you mentioned the Smothering Tithe.
Yes.
And I sort of have a side bet from the show I was just on. I was talking about how I think that Smothering Tithe, the extended art foil, is going to be one of the most expensive cards in this set, period.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. People are already raving about that card, the new artwork on it. They love it. There's an Easter egg in it, in case you haven't noticed.
Huh. No, I haven't.
The full art one?
Yeah, I haven't noticed.
In the full art one, if you look underneath because it's a full art, right? It's underneath the text box.
Right.
There's actually somebody's face in there. And if you look at the fingertips of it, there's just so much to this artwork. I don't know how much you want me to put on the rabbit hole here.
Go ahead. Yeah.
But you can see that there's a face where he's actually smothering him with coins, right? And,
okay.
And right at his fingertips, right along the card type line where you see enchantment just to the right of that, you'll see the teeth of the mouth of the person that's kind of upside down, if you will, there.
Yeah.
That you have the coins being shoved into. And on each of the fingers on the hand, you have a different colored ring of the Wooburg, right? The white, blue, red, black, green.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot going on in this artwork. It's just stellar home run.
The flavor text got me. It was like, if I could sleep and breathe this or something like that, when she's talking about the gold, the treasures. Mm-hmm. I just love it. Yeah. I love it.
This whole set. Just
You're mentioning Liliana, the Last Hope. That's getting a reprint.
Mm-hmm.
Kalia of the Best is getting a reprint. Green Sun's Zenith getting a reprint. I'm just going through this list here.
Mana Drain, Thrumming Stone, Phyrexian Altar. I mean, just Phyrexian Altar was one of my before it was spoiled, was one of my predictions that would get reprinted. I did even predict Smothering Tithe.
Mm-hmm.
Though I retracted that because I'm not sure if you're aware, they're also going to be another alternate art of that coming soon for the this year's Judge promos. Right? There was a leak.
Oh, already?
Smothering Tithe. Yeah, the Smothering Tithe is going to be one of the DC, not DCI, Judge promos for this year.
Aren't those so beautiful, though? Aren't those promos so good, though?
Oh, the Judge promos? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're always super expensive.
Yeah. You got two lands right here in a row, City of Brass and Forbidden Orchard. I'm a big fan of City of Brass. It looks like it would be good to draft this set and play with it, especially if you pull one. What they got it at the rare level. Well, I mean, how much do you think a pack is going to cost of this? Because you're going to get, what, three packs to draft with, right?
How much is a pack going to cost?
Sure.
I haven't seen the craze on pre-orders any set, anything like this one. Like,
I know, right?
TSR was bad, but not this bad. This is, prices are skyrocketing, and we still have another week to go.
You got more and more people.
Pre-release.
Yeah, more and more people are getting into the game, man. More and more people. And, you know,
go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was saying, with this particular case, like, there was a sticker shock last time around, 2 years ago, with Double Masters, and everybody's rebelling. I'm not paying $300 a box. I'm not paying $100 for a VIP pack. Well, once they realize just how great that they are, and now those draft boxes are $700+ a piece, the VIP packs are over $200, people have gotten over that sticker shock. We're being trained to pay more.
Right. Absolutely. So I was saying, I mean, what if you didn't get the collector's packs, you got the regular packs, right? How much do you think three packs would cost you to draft with?
Are you talking about during pre-release? During the next week? Oh, God.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be, you're probably, the stores have to make money. So my guess is you're going to be paying between $15 and $20 per pack. So you're talking $60 at least for
because they're going to give out price support, right? Right.
Sure.
So if you pulled City of Brass, I wouldn't say money, you know, but I mean, it's showing here $12.93. I would think.
Oh, not the full art version of it.
Is that going to be in the regular packs as well?
Yeah. I don't know if you've watched, but Gavin Verhey did a box opening.
Okay.
He opened one collector box and one draft box.
No, I haven't yet. So, not yet.
There were a lot of, I was surprised at the number of full art cards that were in the draft box. I thought those would be kind of reserved for the collector box, but looks like the etched are going to be pretty rare in the draft box and the full arts are going to be plentiful. So, I'm surprised by that. That was a surprising move to me because I think the full art is just astounding in this set.
The reprint and Assassin's Trophy, I heard word through the grapevine, they've got an alternate version of artwork on that one as well.
Oh, I think everything that has a full art has an alternate art version. I think every alternate art or every full art is alternate art. Every single one.
We got Supreme Verdict that was coming back.
So they really kind of like pulled out all the stops. Leon and Arbiter, that's another card that people love to play.
Yeah.
Just so many great cards, even if they're not like super valuable. Just so many great cards. All the Lieges.
Was this Hydroid Crisis? Do you remember trying to get that one like a chase rare? Remember that one, Hydroid Crazy?
I actually pulled one.
Oh, really?
So I was a little disappointed. I'm like, oh, it's getting a reprinting.
Yeah, it's getting a reprint. Value, so, they got this at $547. Wasn't it like $25 or something like that at one time?
I know it was upwards of like the $20. Animar was another one that surprised me that they pulled. I don't know if you've ever played that. I'm not sure how much you play Commander, but
I play Commander. Yeah, Commander's now turned into one of my favorite formats, you know?
Animar, is just such a beast. When I saw it, I was like, wow, that was super surprising. Panharmonicon, Hardened Scales. I mean, just this set is
do you really think Glimpse the Unthinkable should be in this set?
I'm
not seeing a lot of mill here. I mean, what, a thousand year storm thing? We go Grixis mill. I mean, I don't think Glimpse should be in this set personally.
But here's the thing. Sure. If you're looking at it from a draft perspective, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a reprint set. Like, they're satisfying virtually
everyone.
Every format. Yeah. They're downshifting things to common that's going to really shake up the pauper format.
Rafik the Many. They're pleasing everyone. Exactly, you know? Nicol Bolas, God Pharaoh. Who wouldn't want to pull one of those, you know? A Planar Bridge, you know?
Because, like, Thrumming Stone, is there ever a set that you could, that it's really, like, super awesome to draft with, but no. However, they're great to go constructed, you know, with your Persistent Petitioners. And there's another one in here. I can't remember what it was. It was a black card that you can put as many of them.
No, this I've never
seen it before.
This one I'm really interested in. I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast in the past. Cryptic Spires. And I love the name too. Cryptic Spires. Look at that. but we're talking in the past where they have design space they're not working with. Like, take a card and mutilate it in the game, and it helps you out, right? By mutilating this card. Yeah. So like for instance, Bob, for instance, just work with me on this, right? You got a card, and it says punch out this area. And if you punch out this little perforated circle, then the card now has, you know, humiliate, you know, where humiliate's going to win you the game, you know? And it's like, but I had to destroy the card in order to win the game. But think about in the future, how many people didn't destroy that card, you know?
Oh, and it's going to absolutely. So went into like a whole rant on the last stream about that. So I would love to get into that with you.
So
it
right.
Sounds like we're very much on
chart. Yeah. So Crypt Expires, here we are. Crypt Expires. And for anyone out there that has never heard of this card, let me zoom in so I can read it here. Crypt Expires. There it is. As you create your deck, and that's interesting because I don't think these words have ever been on a Magic card before. I could be wrong, but I don't know. As you create your deck, circle two of the colors below. And they got a picture here of Wooburg. Crypt Expires enters the battlefield tapped. Tap, add one mana of either of the circled colors. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that one, man?
Oh, I'm in love with this card now. I'm in a minority, so you're just going to have to bear with me.
Yeah.
A, I love the fact that they finally put a brand new card, never seen before, in a master set. I don't know why they can't do that. That's fine. I'm all about new cards if they fit, if they make the game better.
Yep. Yeah.
Hallelujah. Do it, my friends. The artwork on this card is stellar. I am in love with the artwork on this card.
Yep.
As far as destructible, I'm sorry, you were calling alterable or something. I call them destructible cards.
Yeah.
Due to the idea that in other game spaces like board games, Pandemic Legacy, some other games that you may have heard of, where as part of the scenarios that you play, they're considered like a one-time playthrough board game because you tear up some of the cards. You put stickers on the board. You mutate things to where they no longer function like they do every time you put them in a deck.
Okay.
Other games have done this to an extent, and other things that are coming up, they're hinting at it with the potential stickers out of Unfinity that are coming up.
Here's a question for you. Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but here's a question. Because I'm looking at this and I'm reading this, right? As you create your deck, circle two of the colors below. Okay, here's my question. I built this red-white deck. When I was playing with that red-white deck, I definitely circled the red and the white, right? Mm-hmm. But now I'm playing with a blue-black deck, and I took this card out of my red-white deck, and I'm circling the blue-black on the bottom. So right now, I technically got four things circled. Is there an issue? Why can't I? Because it says, as you create your deck, circle two of the colors below.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be errated that you can only have two circled at some point. I get where you're going with that.
Right.
It's great that they're delving into that space. And I think that a better way to accomplish that, in all honesty, was something that they did in the World of Warcraft trading card game where you had scratch off sections, right? You would scratch off to reveal a code to redeem in game. So imagine if you knew what it was going to be, but you could only scratch off one, and if more than one is scratched off, then the card is invalid for play.
Right.
Got it. And that would just lead to so many different things. It opens up to go destructible, opens up such a amazing design space that they could take advantage of, and you'll come up with a way that it, you know, makes the game best. And think about that. Cards that are either only ever good for one game, or they're only good for one particular playstyle once you choose it, right? That if you don't do this, now you're appealing to the collector's market, and you have a pristine version of the Crypt Expires or an unscratched scratch-off, or if they're stickers, you haven't peeled it. You see where I'm going.
Yeah.
That, you know, WotC's desperately trying to create value, right? And they have to come up with a way that doesn't break the reserve list. And so they have to be exploring these different new options that we've never seen before, whether it's foiling techniques or destructible cards,
right,
to create value, to give investor confidence for people to be buying, you know, new product in mass.
In a nutshell, I guess what I'm alluding to is I think it's really awesome because I know for a fact, if you go back through some previous podcasts on the Crypto Commander, me and you together have talked about this. And I think we even talked about it over on the roundtable too, because the things we're bringing up, it's just deja vu all over, you know. But Crypt Expires, you know, just moving on to Honor Time, we've got a reprint of Grim Flayer. whoa, I'm just going now. The prices on these are going down as we're looking at them here. And I'm looking at the price of this one. I'm really surprised that if I'm going to murder the name, forgive me. Mizzix of the is Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
They got that close card enough at $2.80. Wow. This, in my opinion, is undervalued. It's a 2-2 body, red, blue, two other legendary creature, goblin wizard. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, I'm going to go back to it here. With mana value greater than the number of experience counters you have, you get an experience counter. On the bottom, it says instant sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast for each experience counter you have. I think that's an undervalued card right there at $2.80. I mean, it's a mythic rare. Some people look at that and be like, it's a bulk mythic rare, but in my opinion, no. I mean, there's a reason why it's in this master set. You got Eternal Witness reprinted. Wow. Again, the price of these are going down. I understand that. Inquisition of Kozilek. Look at that. I'm glad they're doing that one. Wow.
Yeah. So many cards. I mean, we'd be here all night really going through many of the... I mean, just beyond, I guess what you're getting at is beyond just the value of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great cards being reprinted, and I think that they're getting hammered in value.
Oh, yeah.
Almost unnecessarily, because a lot of these are just great cards, and this is not going to be a highly printed set.
Okay.
You know, people are sort of panicking, almost like this was a standard set that's going to be print to demand, and there's going to be 10 million copies of these put in.
Right.
That's not going to be the case.
Right. Figure of Destiny. I remember that was a high dollar card, man. So much so, I remember somebody getting a tattoo of this card. 93 cents right here, I'm looking at. Wow.
Well, even like Oracle of Maldaia, before they announced reprinting, that card was $20, like just a couple months ago.
Right.
Muldroth of the Gravetide, down at $5. People are, you know, everybody should be rejoicing. If you wanted some of these cards, Phyrexian Altar was close to $100, already down at 47. As more gets open, that's going to drop, at least a version that you want to get your hands on.
Oh, here you go.
So many amazing cards.
Livewire Lash. I'm not sure if you know about this one. I've mentioned this one a bunch of times before. Have you seen that card before?
I have not.
Livewire Lash. Oh, my goodness. Look at it. So it's an artifact equipment. It costs 2. It's got equip of 2, all right? And it reads, equipped creature gets +2/+0 and has, whenever this creature becomes a target of a spell, this creature deals 2 damage to any target.
Oh, yeah. You could abuse that.
With infect, bro. It's really horrible. So, yeah. Yeah, that's what price again was it? 25 cents. Look at that. That's, I'm telling you, playset worthy picking that guy up. Again, I'm just scrolling. I know you said we'll be here all night, but I'm actually scrolling through this pretty quick.
Yeah. There's just so much here. I mean,
oh, really, I know. So it's, much. This is a set to get, you know, and I joked about it so much, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but these master sets are actually cubes, if you think about it, you know? They're cubes. Yep.
They're almost like chaos drafts.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's because of all the different sets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever done a chaos draft?
I have not. Unfortunately, with the just, you know, we talk about time. I spent so much time in Magic doing the research because I've really gotten into the investing part of it. And I spend a lot of time on other people's podcasts and, you know, live casts and, you know, doing videos, squeezing it all in. I just haven't had enough time to play. It's unfortunate. It's like the more we talk about it, the less time we have to play it.
Now, here's one for you. Now, the whole list goes by price, right? Did you notice the last cards on this list? So, like, Jeskai Elder comes in at 5 cents, right? But then if you go to the last three cards, you got Fire Song and Sunspeaker. There's no price. Allosaurus Shepherd, $28.35. Wait. Where did that price come from, right? And then the last card, Renin 6, $58.89.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man. So, and yeah, that's beautiful artwork, by the way. I like that.
This is going to be an amazing set. Just pure and simple. Whether you crack it, hold on to it for investing, get, you know, target singles for decks that you need.
Right.
It's just wow.
I would love to draft this set personally, especially for the price range. I mean, like you said earlier, we're becoming numb to the price range. Speaking of fatigue, we're going to go ahead and go over to our last segment of the podcast, which is called Beginner's Corner. And this week, Bob, you thought it would be great to talk about Jumpstart. And Jumpstart's coming out with every new standard product now?
That's what they said. Initially, Jumpstart 2022 was announced last year. I'm not sure if that's even going to be a thing anymore. Because surprise, surprise, when they spoiled Dominaria for the product lineup, they spoiled it. There's going to be Dominaria United Jumpstart. So apparently, with every new standard set, they're going to have Jumpstart. And so why are we mentioning this during the Beginner's Corner?
Right.
Because I believe that this is one of the most superior products that WotC has been able to come up with for Jumpstart, for new players. And that is, in case you're unfamiliar with it, you don't really have to know anything about Magic. This is literally one of the only products that you can buy. You grab two packs, don't have to know anything about designing decks. You smash them both together. You read the rules, have somebody else grab two decks or two packs, smash them both together. And you have decks. It's like instant add water, have deck.
I will say that you got to know like what the lands do and the casting costs on the top.
Sure. But you don't have to design decks. You don't have to go out there and you know, one of the most difficult things as a, I guess, middling player or even expert player is deck tuning, deck building. And this is something you don't have to worry about with that, right? You just pick up a product, you grab two packs, smash them together, and you have a deck. That's how you play the format.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic that starting September 9th, at least in my opinion, it's fantastic to have an entry-level price product, an entry-level product for ease of building. It's not really a lot of intense thought that you have to put into it, and there's randomness to it. It's just a stellar product, in my opinion.
And in my opinion, I think it's really exciting, you know, in all honesty, and I don't want to, you know, downplay it when I say this, but, you know, because again, I just think it's so amazing, such an amazing product. You take two little miniature things, put them together, and then boom, you got a little small deck you can play with, and hopefully you can get somebody else to buy two of them too, right? And put it together. Well, actually, one box has two decks in it, right? Yeah, that's how it works.
One box actually has, they changed it up. That's the only kind of poo-poo that I have on this product, so to speak, and that is that they went from 24 packs down to 18. So it used to be you could have six players playing out of a single box.
Okay.
So now you can have, because each of you are supposed to grab two packs, so that's four packs per game, right? So you had six games going before. Now you only have four games plus maybe two for prize pack. I don't know. It feels like a hot dog and bun scenario. But the product itself is absolutely fantastic.
That's funny. The hot dog and bun scenario. How many
That's
times
the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah.
Like, damn it. I've got nine sets of packs.
Yeah.
What?
but in all honesty, you got some cards sometimes that are in these that are exclusive to the product. I'm not sure if they're going to keep up that trend. I hope they do. You know, because
I believe that's what they said. Yeah, that there will be both it'll be just specific to that set, which a lot of people don't know about. The original Jumpstart was actually just a supplementary product to Core 2021. That's why there's all those Core 2021 cards in that set. The lands are Core 2021. So now they're just going to be doing it for every standard set coming out.
And interesting enough, again, I don't want to bring up a sore subject, but it's my fault Peddler's not on today's show. And I would look at him right now and be like, what's your thought? Because they got basic lands coming, buddy. And he'd probably be like, what? I get to start collecting again, you know?
I would really love to know what his thoughts are on all. I don't know how familiar you are with the original Jumpstart, that I would be very interested to get Peddler's take on the original Jumpstart, because you know he's Mr. Basic Lands, at least in my book he is, and each unique pack type, you know, out of Jumpstart, they had a unique basic land type never seen, or not type of artwork that you'd never seen.
Oh, yeah, And a lot of it's beautiful. The only one I ever pulled in real life was the mountain.
I've ordered like 25 copies of some and 20 of others, because I love those artworks that are in them. They're really, really neat. But I'd be curious for somebody that's trying to get, you know, one of each basic land, what he thinks about Jumpstart, if they're going to continue to that trend of putting a unique artwork on a basic land in every single pack.
That actually
trying to keep up with that.
That's a good question that needs to be brought up to Peddler. Yeah, that's a great question. But no, I do. I like the product, man. What I didn't like back in the day was those starter decks where they explained to you, look, don't shuffle the cards, just play. They're already pre-built, you know? I didn't like that so much. But the Jumpstart product for beginners, I do like that.
I think WotC's done a very poor job of focusing on the new blood, that they've always relied on the community to bring in, or the LGSs to bring in the new blood. And, you know, I think a lot of their deals with like Amazon and these other big box stores really kind of takes away from the LGS and giving product to Amazon when it won't to the LGSs. That's, you know, just a terrible shift in the market mentality. I understand why they're doing it in the corporate bottom line. I get that. But they've really done a very bad job of making new players feel welcome. It's always the community that makes the players feel welcome, not WotC. Right. However, making a product like Jumpstart, I think it is the place to try to make new players feel welcome. It's a format that's unintimidating, fairly easy to follow. You know, you don't have to put a lot of brain work of combing through card after card after card. So kind of like a low entry level, if you ask me. And to that point, I think that the only part that they fell down on the original Jumpstart is that they put so many valuable cards in it that it made the collectors gobble up all the product.
Right.
So
right.
I don't think they should put, I know this might not be popular with people, I don't think they should put those crazy valuable cards in a targeted beginner set.
I see what you're saying, because the first time they did the Jumpstart, it didn't have too much of appeal for the expert players like myself. Like, I passed it up completely. And then somebody told me, well, there is like a card or two in there that's worth money, you know? And I was like, say what? I completely passed that up, you know? But yeah, I think they...
Yeah, Allosaurus Shepherd at $100, Crater right. of Behemoth at $40, and yeah. like just so many, Bruvac at $50. Right. And, you know, there's card after card after card, that's $10 to $15 or more. And I think that sort of hurts the product, because it now makes people that are value hunting go out and gobble up all the product, rather than, you know, really targeting it towards newer players to give them an entry level. And it's a really fantastic way to do it for new people or inexperienced people.
What I think WotC should do is bring back that one program where they did the I talked about it in our group chat. I'm not sure if you saw that, where it was showdown packs. Remember the showdown packs?
I do not.
So they had showdown where it was standard showdown, and you would bring a friend in. If you brought a friend in, you got a showdown pack, because that new person's ever played Magic. It was like a 3-pack and it was random. And then I got a, what they call it, an invention land. What would they call that, man, from Innistrad? You know, one of those lands. It was foil.
Expedition?
Anyway, yeah, there you go. Expedition. I pulled an expedition land. It was like worth $40 at the time or something, you know? And it was like, wow, these packs contain money. You know, they're showdown packs, 3 cards in each pack. If you bring new players, if you win the little tournament they had, you get a pack. So many things to do, but we're out of time this week. But I think they should bring the program back like that. They even did the same thing with Amaket. You know, you get, if you do all these things, you get rewarded. Like, if you do this one, you get a 4-sided die, you know? At any rate, I think WotC should take note to that and bring those programs back. You know, I understand with things with the world's going, you know, with the way the world's going today and stuff, but I think they should bring the program like that back. But we're out of time this week, Bob. And again, I want to thank you for coming on today's show.
Sure.
And we'll have a link in the description below for a link to your content as well. And for the listeners, tune in next week. And until next time, keep spell slinging.